Hi, everyone. This is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy and Passionate World Talk Radio, where our mantra is to educate, enlighten, and entertain. The views of the guest may not represent those of the station or the host. Folks, I have an exceptional guest on today. If you are a caregiver, and chances are if you're not a caregiver, you will be a caregiver or need a caregiver. And I do have a public service announcement because here it is, middle of August. September's around the corner. And what is September? World Alzheimer's Awareness Month. And I'm so glad to have my guest on with me today, who is Dr. Aaron Blight, that's B-L-I-G-H-T, who is an international speaker and consultant on caregiving, aging, and healthcare. Dr. Blight is a writer and author. He wrote the book, When Caregiving Calls, Guidance as You Care for a Parent, Spouse, or Aging Relative. The book received a 2020 Best Indie Book Award and a 2021 IFFY Award. He is the founder of Caregiving Kinetics. Dr. Blight has served as a family caregiver, home care company owner, caregiving scholar, and policy leader at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Dr. Blight received his doctoral degree from George Washington University and is an adjunct professor at Public Health and Shenandoah University. Can't talk. He's on the honorary board of Well Spouse Association and services on the advisory board of the Shenandoah Area Agency on Aging. Wow. See, folks, I have exceptional guests. You have to subscribe to Chatting with Betsy. I want to welcome Dr. Aaron Blight to Chatting with Betsy. Welcome,
Hi,
Dr. Blight.
Thank you, Betsy. Thank you so much. It's so great to be here with you today.
Oh, you are welcome. It is my pleasure. So many things to discuss, but I always ask the authors, what motivated you to write your book, which is, I feel, desperately needed and a very good resource?
Yeah, so I decided to write When Caregiving Calls, Guidance as You Care for a Parent, Spouse, or Aging Relative after my own family caregiving experience, after owning a caregiving company, working with family caregivers in their homes, trying to support aging relatives, after studying caregiving in connection with my doctoral degree, I was able to sell my home care company with an unexpected time. It was an unsolicited offer that I received, and I then had the chance to kind of say, well, now what do I do? And I realized that with all of that background and experience, both personally and professionally in caregiving, that I really had to do something with that to try to help family caregivers. And so that's what prompted me to write the book.
That's excellent. I did not receive the book to read it. So I'd like for you to tell the audience what is in your book that will help them as caregivers or future caregivers.
Sure. So, you know, in caregiving, so often family caregivers are focused on the day-to-day tasks of caregiving. And
yes,
rightfully so. There's always so much that has to be done. And so my book, When Caregiving Calls, it really does not talk about the tasks of caregiving. It talks about the social and the relationship dynamics and what's happening to you internally in your mind and in your heart. And it's based in research. It's grounded in research on caregiving. And so it helps the family caregiver to think differently about the caregiving experience. And in so doing, I think it is able to help them increase their resilience and be better and more comfortable in the role.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I know, Dr. Blight, when I was caregiving, I caregived for my mother-in-law first, and then my husband was diagnosed at the age of 56. And you were a caregiver, so you know all the emotions that go along with that and the burnout. And then I found after caregiving, having post-traumatic stress. Have you found that in your research and writing your book or your experiences talking to other caregivers about that?
Absolutely, Bethany, yes. Caregiving can be an emotional roller coaster, and a lot of caregivers do have PTSD-type symptoms afterwards. But when you're in the thick of it, it can be so disorienting that you don't even quite realize how it's affecting you emotionally. And I'll just share this with you. This is an interesting little thing. When I was writing When Caregiving Calls, I discovered that psychologists use lists of emotions to help their patients process their experiences, think a little more deeply about how their circumstances are affecting them. And so I looked online for a list of emotions that I could maybe incorporate into the book, and there was one that I thought was pretty nice in there, and I reached out to this website to ask them if I could, you know, with citation, use their list of emotions in the book, and they said no. And so so I just created a broader list of emotions and included that in the book, and we created a PDF, a downloadable PDF of this list of emotions. And when I speak to caregiving groups, sometimes we will use that. It's about 150 emotions on there, and invite the caregivers to just quietly reflect and circle the 10 emotions that are most descriptive of how they are feeling in the caregiving role. And then after they've done that, just look at the emotions that you selected. And oftentimes the caregivers are surprised at this little exercise. It sounds very simple, but it can be very revealing when you really discover how caregiving can be impacting you in a negative way emotionally.
Oh, absolutely. That is so true, Dr. Blight. I also run a support group, but I've been in several caregiving groups on Facebook, and I can tell you resentment comes up. Yeah. I know I felt resentment.
Yes.
Guilt. Oh, guilt is a big one. That's like right at the top, you know. Yeah. Should I have done this? Or what would happen if I didn't do this? And the would have, could have, should have will just drive someone a cuckoo, and it just drains your energy. I know my personal experience, I didn't think I would feel guilty because I know I did everything for Matt, but yet I did. I felt guilty for like a year, and I had to let it go. I felt extreme guilt in picking out the wrong hospice. And I felt awful about it. And it's tough.
Yeah, I talk about two G words for caregivers, guilt and grief.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
guilt that you described, it's just very, very common. And guilt is kind of what sometimes we feel when we compare ourselves, who we are, or how we're acting, or how we're feeling, to some idealized version of ourselves that we think we should be, and when we don't measure up, we feel like, you know, we're guilty. We should be this or that. We should be doing things better, or we should not be doing other things. And the guilt conundrum can really take its toll mentally and emotionally on caregivers. So one of the best, one of the most important things, I think, for caregivers is to exercise a little bit of self-compassion.
Yes.
Caregivers are so good at showing compassion to others, to their loved one who they're caring for. They offer such devoted service to them and forgiveness, and yet they also can be the hardest on themselves. And so that would be something I would just say to your audience, if you're a caregiver and you're feeling those sentiments of guilt, I would ask you to try to exercise a little bit of self-compassion and realize you're doing the very best that you can, and that's all you can do, and that's okay.
Yes. Oh, Dr. Blight, if you were in front of me right now, I'd give you a hug. Just want to hug you for saying that, because you hit the nail on the head. It's so true. I've seen it over and over. I've been on Facebook for 9 years now. And what caregivers go through, you know, they promise their loved one, I won't place you. And then they feel guilty for placing their loved one. And they don't realize that sometimes our loved ones need more care than we could provide. And that doesn't mean you failed them. We have no control of this disease and what it does to our loved ones. And which leads me to the emotion of the feeling, the awful feeling that I experience of helplessness. Like you feel helpless. Watching your loved one have a hallucination and being agitated by their hallucination, even though they were medicated, it's a lot. And then, you know, when you have to deal with professionals, and I'm not going to, you know, get down in the medical community, because there's a lot of great doctors out there, nurses, social workers, hospice teams. There's fantastic people out there. I unfortunately had the hospice from hell, but you have to be an advocate. You know, you have to be an advocate for your loved one and for yourself, and making sure that, you know, they're getting the right treatment and medication.
Yeah. Well, Betsy, that's something else that we talk about in the book and when caregiving calls. It's that even if you do have to place your loved one, or whenever your loved one is receiving care, medical care from a provider, you often are the one who knows your loved one the best. You know your loved one's patterns of behavior. You know their idiosyncrasies, their personality, and so you might be able to better discern changes to those patterns, and that could be an important part of what you're doing as an advocate, to provide that information to the medical provider so that they understand a little bit more, you know, because that's a 15-minute visit maybe with the doctor. There's only so much that the doctor can glean from that. And so you can become eyes and ears and a source of information. At the same time, in a facility setting, I was just going to say, in a facility setting also, you may not be the one providing the direct care on a daily basis, but you may find yourself coming in and observing the conditions in the facility, observing the state of your loved one to see if they're receiving proper care, and if the staff is attentive, and you may find that they've fallen short on something, in which case you go to the administration and need to address it that way. And that's a very important role as a family member.
And added stress to that. That's why I always advocate for education. I tell, you know, caregivers all the time, educate yourself about your loved one's diagnosis, what to expect. And the better informed and educated a caregiver is, the better their journey will be with their loved one, and their loved one will have a better journey. Because I know the difference. When my mother-in-law was diagnosed, Dr. Blight, it was in 2000, which there wasn't much information then. I never heard of Alzheimer's. Yeah. I worked as a nurse. I never heard of it. It was called different names in the 70s and 80s. And I never, you know, they were just senile. And so I didn't handle her hallucinations. I didn't know that was part of the package and the sundowning. There wasn't much information then. And then compared to when Matt hallucinated, I was educated. I knew what to do. And it's so much better for me because I knew how to handle it.
Yeah. It's wonderful that there is more information, there's more research, the ability to access helpful, useful information with the internet has just multiplied over time, and so with the internet, that's a real blessing for caregivers. And
yes.
I think you mentioned you've got some online support groups as well, and I'm a huge fan of caregiver support groups, whether they're in person or online. They can be immensely helpful.
Oh, definitely. My own experience, I didn't have support. My mother-in-law had Alzheimer's, so I took care of her. My dad was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I didn't take care of him, but yeah, I supported my mom. I visited my dad. And then Matt, my husband, I didn't have support for 14 years. And when I went on Facebook, I literally went crazy joining groups and was so happy to know I wasn't alone, that there's other people feeling that way. And you get tips and you learn from other caregivers. What I was going to say, you're talking about the doctors. I like to tell caregivers, write down notes. What's going on with your loved one? And be prepared when you go to a doctor with notes, because they only have about 15 minutes. And have your list ready of what you want to talk about. I found that very helpful. Document their behaviors.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that's an important role for the family caregiver in the doctor's visits.
Yes. And it's also important, I feel, to know about the side effects of medications so that you can call a doctor if you see something unusual.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Betsy, the medication aspect of things, sometimes I just found myself scratching my head when I owned my home care company and I was in the homes of some of our clients. You know, I saw commonly individuals who were in their 80s or 90s, and they would have 10 or 12 or 15 different medications. And our company had responsibility for kind of managing that and making sure that medications were taken on time. When you're taking that many meds, it's complicated.
Yes.
I think it's hard to keep track of what to take and when. And I also think that there's some experimentation there when you consider the interactions of different drugs with each other. I've had a few conversations with pharmacists, and again, I just want to make sure that everybody knows I'm not a medical doctor. My doctoral degree is actually in learning. So what I'm saying here, I'm not a medical professional in making this comment, but it seems like in some cases you can't really fully know how these drugs will interact with each other. And
that's
so there's
true.
This process of experimentation, even with the doctor who's prescribing and trying to figure out how to optimize the pharmaceutical care for the patient.
Yes, that's very true. And medication is trial and error, for sure. Because nobody knows how someone's going to react to something until they take it. I had an experience when my husband's what is it called? It just went right out of my head. Alexion was increased, and Matt was able to walk outside at the time by himself, and he said he felt drunk and he fell. So I called the doctor up and I said, Matt had this reaction, and the doctor said, oh no, he couldn't have a reaction like that. And I said, well, yes, he can. because I looked it up, the PDR.
Yeah.
And yes, he can. So, you know, put him back in the original dosage. And so I knew, you know, the information. And even with hospice, Matt was so agitated, the medicine wasn't working. And they were giving more of the same, and they were mad at me because I kept calling and saying it wasn't working. And they didn't believe me that he was dying. He was terminally agitated, and they didn't believe me. And till he went up to the hospice unit in the hospital, and then they saw the condition that he was in. But, you know, they thought... This is funny. I'm petite, so people think I'm this quiet, sweet person, which I am, until you get on my wrong side. And they, you know, my mama bear claws had to come out. And, yeah. You know, you just, for someone, a social worker telling me, talking down to me, like I'm stupid. I had to put her in her place nicely, but I put her in her place. And, you know, Matt complained of a headache, clear as day. My husband never complained. And he said, clear as day, I have a headache. And the social worker said, no, he couldn't possibly have a headache. And I said, who are you to say that? I said, do you know what a dying brain feels like? You know, so being, you know, like I always tell people, be nice, be respectful, but be firm and get your point across. That's what I suggest.
That's a great illustration of how you, as a family caregiver, know your loved one in many respects better than the medical professionals, and it really is important for you to speak up and to be that advocate for them.
Oh, absolutely. I told that social worker in the hospital, I said, you need to listen to the caregiver. We know our loved ones better than you do. And when someone says they're in pain, yes, people with dementia can have pain. Why people don't think that, I don't know. But, yes, they do have pain, and you need to believe them and believe what the caregiver's telling you about what is going on with your loved one. It just boggles my mind
I agree.
How some people, you know, can work in a profession and not be, you know, compassionate. I just have no idea. Dr. Blight, what would you like the reader, the caregiver, the soon-to-be caregiver, take away from your book?
Well, thank you for asking me that. Betsy, yeah.
Sure.
One of the things that I think is maybe unique about when caregiving calls is the questions for reflection that are at the end of each chapter. And I'd like to maybe just share a little bit about that.
Sure.
Because my doctoral degree, as I said earlier, it's in learning. It's actually in adult learning. And I've studied caregiving as a transformative learning experience. And, you know, sometimes we think about learning as something that we do in the classroom when we're young and we get a diploma, or we think about learning on the job. But the process of caregiving is a huge learning experience for all family caregivers. And so as I was writing When Caregiving Calls, I kept thinking about the family caregiver and what do they need to know. And I wrote 18 chapters based on that, some of the information that a family caregiver needs to know. And the chapters are concise. They're not long-winded. and that was great. And I thought, you know, it's great to provide a book that gives information, but I really want to provide a resource that could potentially transform the family caregiver's experience. And this is where the background in learning and learning research and learning theory comes in. We know that through intentional reflection, that is a gateway to learning for adults. And so, what I did is after each of those 18 chapters, I included questions for reflection that are designed to prompt the caregiver to think more deeply about what they just read and to apply it to their individual caregiving experience, and to even journal, even write in a process of reflection, their answers to these questions. And if the caregiver uses the book that way and actually does that active reflection and journaling, it can be a very impactful learning experience. And I remember when the book was just released, there was a woman, it was at a conference that I was speaking at, and she was about 75 years old, and she told me that she spoke up after I was done with the talk, and she said that she read the book, but she also did this the way that I just described. She had a journal, and she took her time with it, and she wrote her answers to all of the questions. And she had been a caregiver for her mother for about 6 years, and then she had been a caregiver who's actively caregiving for her husband, and that had been for about 13 years. So it's about 20 years of her life was involved in caregiving. And she said, "I have learned more about caregiving and more about myself just by doing these questions for reflection than I ever had before in the 20 years of caregiving." And I honestly, Betsy, I was floored that she said that, humbled, grateful. But I've heard feedback like that from other caregivers. And one of the early readers of the book said to me, "Well, I liked the questions for reflection, but I didn't like the questions for reflection." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said, "Well, I guess there were just some questions and some things that I did not want to think about." And then she paused and she goes, "But I know that I had to think about them, so they were good." And she unwittingly just summed up the whole reason that those questions are in there. You know, sometimes as caregivers, it's easier to just avoid certain topics. Sometimes we want to be an ostrich and just not even go there with certain things because they're too hard to think about. But down inside, we know that we have to think about some of those things. And when you can honestly confront the realities of the situation, even if those realities are really, really hard to confront, you're going to be better equipped to serve as a caregiver, and you're going to do a better job. So sometimes caregivers, they don't even know. I think, and by the way, Betsy, this is not a book where I tell the caregiver what to do. I will never tell a family caregiver what to do in their individual circumstances, you know, because it's such a personal thing, and there are so many factors that go into decision-making. So I think often family caregivers have access themselves to the best solutions to their challenges, but sometimes they just don't know the right questions to ask. And so the book really is focused on those questions that hopefully can prompt them to do a little better in the caregiving role.
Wow, that is such golden nuggets, Dr. Blake. I mean, you just really are on target. It's so true. I feel, in my own experience, we have to validate our feelings. And, you know, we're taught not to, especially if you come from my generation. I'm 65. You know, you just... Yeah. Suck it up and go, you know, you just don't talk about anything. You don't express your emotion. You just do what you have to do. And you can't, that's old school thinking, as I call it, or this be strong mentality that I can't stand. It drives me nuts when people say, you know, be strong. We were strong. Somebody's dying, we're allowed to cry. And that grieving is a whole nother topic. But you're right. I mean, we need to validate our feelings. And I just want to add, you know, there's no shame. I'm a mental health advocate. to debt counseling. You can't go through caregiving alone. Debt counseling. I received counseling midway through Matt's journey, and I'm having counseling now to deal with caregiving, post-traumatic, and grieving. And I'm not ashamed to say that. It's not a sign of weakness, folks, to go for help. It's a sign of strength. So if you feel like you need it, then go for it, and don't worry what people think, because you need to take care of you. And that self-care, so important for the caregiver. Dr. Blight, I'd like for you to talk about your caregiving kinetics. What is that? What do they do for the caregiver?
Yeah. So Caregiving Kinetics is a very specialized firm. We focus on support for all caregivers, either family caregivers, informal caregivers, or professional caregivers who work in a variety of settings. And I do this primarily through speaking and workshops and presentations, community workshops, keynote addresses, also through consulting with professional organizations, and also through the provision of additional resources for family caregivers. And one thing that I would maybe just like to share with your audience, Betsy, is that there are free downloadable resources on the website on caregivingkinetics.com for family caregivers. And these are kind of one-pagers. There are caregiving models there that can be downloaded. And the idea behind a model is that it gives you a point of reference. It gives you language that you can use to communicate something that's kind of abstract, a latent concept that may be hard to define. And the models show how caregivers evolve over the course of their caregiving experience, how their sense of self might change, how their relationship with their loved one might change, and how their motivations are factors there. So I mentioned the emotions worksheet earlier, which is a free downloadable resource there. There's a model on developing caregiver resilience. There's a model there on the growth process that caregivers go through. How do you grow into the role of caregivers? And that involves personal aspects, relational aspects, behavioral aspects, experimental aspects, and motivational aspects of caregiving. And when you really kind of break it down like that, it's like, wow, I am going through these things. I didn't realize it, but that's an important part of growing into the role. And the newest model that's on there is called the Caregiver Mind Shift. And I'm really happy about this model. I'm proud of it. It came from it started because of a caregiver support group facilitator responded to a blog post that I wrote. The blog post was something like how caregiving challenges your assumptions and changes your attitudes. And the caregiver support group facilitator wrote me this really nice email saying, oh, I love this post. It's so true. We used it in our caregiver support group. And that just got me thinking, I should expand on that and, again, bring that learning theory into it, but develop a model on how a caregiver's mind changes about their experience over time. Because there is a pattern over the course of long-term caregiving. You know, oftentimes when you're new to caregiving, it's disorienting, it's confusing, you're just trying to get your bearings straight and figure out what in the world is going on. And then then you go through this process of sense making. You're finding a balance. You're adjusting things in your life to this emerging caregiving need and your evolving caregiving role. And after, you know, the veteran caregivers, people like you, Betsy, that have done it for years and years for a loved one, your mind changes and you've adjusted your life fully to meet the needs of your loved one. And there's a certain level of acceptance that enters into the picture. And that can be liberating. It can be very illuminating. But all of this is kind of depicted in a graphical sense. And then there are questions, because I love the questions and reflection. We talked about that. But questions that can prompt dialogue and discussion and deep thinking for caregivers and professionals who help them. And so you can take this model and you can look at it. Let's say that you're with, you mentioned counselors, right? I agree with you. I'm a huge fan of caregivers meeting with counselors. Sometimes counselors need resources to help their patients who are struggling in a caregiving role. A counselor can download one of these resources and say, okay, let's look at this model and let's apply it in your situation. Let's talk about how you're feeling about these different things and what does it mean for you. So those resources, and I'm talking a lot about the resources aspect of the website, right? But they're there freely for caregivers and the professionals who support them. So I hope that they can be useful for people.
Wow. Oh, I love that. You just made my day. this is why I do my show, folks, to have people like Dr. Blight on to give resources for caregivers, for people who are going to be caregivers, that I wish I had 20 years ago. Let's see, 23 years ago. Yeah, 20 years ago, or 23 years ago. Time goes by so fast. Definitely. And I know caregiving changed me, became a better person. And, you know, it's a mindset, I feel, of, you know, either you're going to take this experience, learn from it, be a better person, or the complete opposite. So enjoyed talking to you, Dr. Blight. Where can people purchase your book?
I've enjoyed speaking with you, too.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Betsy. Yeah, so the book can be found wherever books are sold. You know, it's available online through Amazon, but you can also buy it at a brick-and-mortar store. You may have to special order it there. Some people like to go to independent bookstores or, you know, Barnes & Noble. So it's When Caregiving Calls, Guidance as you Care for a Parent, Spouse, or Aging Relative.
And how about Caregiving Kinetics?
So that website is Caregiving Kinetics, and that's KINETICS, caregivingkinetics.com.
Awesome. And can people contact you, get in touch with you through the caregivingkinetics.com?
Yes. Yes. There's a contact form on that page, and that actually goes right to my inbox.
Oh, great. That's great in case people want to connect with you. Folks, I'll tell you what. If I was a caregiver or going to be a caregiver in that caregiving age, listening to my show, I would buy the book and I would definitely go on caregivingkinetics.com for this information. There's a lot of information out now. I wish it was available when in my caregiving time, but that's one of the reasons why I do Chatting with Betsy. This is my passion, is to help people, let people know about resources. So thank you, Dr. Aaron Blight, for coming on and sharing about your book, When Caregiving Calls, Guidance as You Care for a Parent, Spouse, or Aging Relative. That is the name of the book, folks. And all the information about Dr. Aaron Blight will be in the blog that Jeannie White, who's station manager at Pastor World Talk Radio, writes, and Jeannie produces the show. I always thank Jeannie, and I want to thank Lillian Caldwell, who's CEO of Pastor World Talk Radio, who makes this all possible. Excuse me. And I want to thank you, the listeners, Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. If you don't already subscribe to Chatting with Betsy, it is for free. I'm on Spotify, Spreaker, YouTube, Amazon, to name just a few. And please share this show. Please tell your friends about Chatting with Betsy. If you know a caregiver, folks, I'll tell you right now, the baby boomer generation is big, growing, and we're going to need caregivers, or we're going to be caregivers. And I've already been a caregiver. I'm probably going to need one. So you know what? Share this show. I want to help as many people as possible, and I need your help. So I appreciate that. And I just want to say, talking about caregivers, I have a support group that I created and founded called #KICK, Alzheimer's Ask Movement, on Facebook. Everyone's welcome to join. And you can follow me on my own personal page, Betsy, B-E-T-S-Y, E, Wurzel, W-U-R-Z-E-L. And again, I want to thank you, Dr. Blight, for coming on, sharing wonderful information. Thank you for writing your book.
Thank you, Betsy.
Caregiving Kinetics, what you do to help. You're welcome. What you do to help caregivers, you've just really lifted me up today and brightened my day, because, folks, I'll tell you the truth. When I started really going into my car 6 years ago, 6 or 7 years ago, people were not talking about caregiving. They weren't. There wasn't much information. It thrills my heart to have people like Dr. Aaron Blight doing what he does, coming on my show, and other people, veteran caregivers, talking about their experience. You know, we learn from each other. So share your stories, share your experiences. Let's help each other. And as I always say at the end of my show, in the world where you can be anything, please be kind, shine your light bright, because if we all did that, it would be a much kinder, brighter world. Until we talk again, this is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio. Bye-bye now.